Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, I'm going to be discussing The Real Housewives of Potomac, both the finale and some of the big news that is coming out about that show and what the cast might look like going forward. I'll also touch on The Real Housewives of Miami, which has a similar sort of rumored shakeup coming, and my thoughts on what could happen there. And then I'm also going to get deep into Buying Beverly Hills Season 2, which dropped on Netflix on Friday, and which I've really blew through. It kind of gives us a lot more insight into Kyle Mauricio's separation, what really went down there. Because I really think that, and again, I'll get into it later, but I think that Real Housewives of Beverly Hills this past season represented Kyle's side of the story, and Buying Beverly Hills really represents Mauricio's side of the story. And I think there are pros and cons to that sort of split. And I think what we saw in Buying Beverly Hills is really telling in many respects. So let's start with Real Housewives of Potomac, which feels like the most urgent of Housewives Bravo news this week. So the season 8 finale was on Sunday night. And first of all, you know, obviously it's no secret. This season has not been the strongest. It has been really stilted, I think, you know, mostly because of a bunch of blockages within the cast, people who didn't want to film with one another, people who kind of just have lost all respect for one another. And when that happens in the cast, it just creates for, it's one thing if like two people want to just kind of coexist and not acknowledge one another. We're going to see how that plays out on this coming season of Jersey with Melissa and Teresa. But when you have that happening between multiple people, it just creates for this, like, there's only so much that the cast can do if that's happening. So, you know, I really did think though that this season in the back half, it slowly did get a little better, especially once they went on that trip. And it culminated in honestly what I think was a great finale, genuinely. I hated that fight, and they didn't show the raw footage that initially went viral when it was filmed last year. That footage is very hard to watch, and I'm actually glad they didn't show it on the show. But I did like the discussions that came from that moment. I liked that we got retellings from various perspectives from different women. And I liked the conversation that Karen led at that sort of final magazine photo shoot unveiling party. Leave it to Karen, the grand dame, to bring them all together to discuss that in a productive way. She is really the only one, I guess Ashley to a lesser extent, but she really is the only one that tried to bridge the gap this season. And I think that she should get a lot of credit for that. And I think that that conversation at the end really was important, and I think was very honest. And I think various women in that group had their moment to address the group and just to give their piece. You know, Ashley on Monday morning posted a TikTok reacting to a lot of viewers and co-stars saying that she was responsible for the fight. You know, she said that she has spent 8 years fighting with her words and never laying hands on anyone. And she did it to that viral sound of all that work and what did it get me? And you know what? I kind of agree with her. Sorry. Like, was she being messy by inviting Deborah to the fashion show? Obviously, but one, that's genuinely her friend. And so she invited a lot of her loved ones that she wanted there to support her. But, you know, obviously she was being messy. She wanted to instigate drama. She knows that her and Candace have bad blood. But that, to me, that is Ashley being a good reality star. She's good at her job. She can play ghost producer sometimes. And I think people want to blame her for so much over the years, but ultimately, like, she is part of the reason why this show has had so many dramatic, great moments over the years. And I think that maybe she thought she was going to give us one via inviting Deborah to this fashion show. Obviously, it did not play out that way. But how many times have we seen people bring someone who was feuding with one of their co-stars to an event to provoke drama on any reality show? That is like a classic hallmark move of reality TV, is bringing a surprise guest and seeing how that person's current foe of the moment reacts to them showing up. We just saw a Married to Medicine when Phaedra brought Quad to Sweet T's bachelorette party. Like, that's not that different. And I think that people are like taking it so serious and blaming Ashley for things getting physical, when it's like, yeah, Ashley wanted to stoke drama and for there to maybe be like a verbal sparring of words. But in what world would Ashley have expected it to get physical like that? She obviously didn't think it was going to get to that point. I'm glad that she did disown Deborah, basically, and disavowed her actions. Like, that was obviously very important. But I don't think that she has the responsibility to take responsibility for how things went down. Like, that, she was not the one to be blamed for that. Obviously, Deborah has the biggest responsibility for things getting physical. She threw the drink. Kierna reacted. And it was tough to see her bleeding like that in the bathroom. And I wish that we had gotten to see Kay at the finale party, but I understand why she didn't show up. I understand why she wasn't there. I'm guessing production was also kind of like trying to figure out like how to handle that. I'm sure they were, you know, in communication with the network. When something happens like that, I'm guessing you wanted to sort of like pull the main characters out of the situation while we sort of figure out how to move forward. But again, I'm glad that Ashley said that she's putting a pause on her friendship with Deborah because of what went down, and because Deborah the next morning doubled down on it on Instagram and didn't really seem apologetic for throwing a drink. Ashley had this confessional where she discussed Candace's words crossing a line and instigating fights for the second time. Obviously, the first time was Monique in season 5. And I'm sorry, but I think she does have a point. I've really grown to love Candace and her presence on this show. She's a confessional artist. She's a wordsmith. But I think she has a history of not being able to take accountability for how far she takes things verbally. And especially on Twitter, especially maybe in the confessionals. And it's simultaneously sort of like the reason why a lot of us have grown to really love her. And it's also the reason why she gets herself into trouble. And excuses are made for that. And people don't recognize that like those words really can be so hurtful. And I also think that like, you know, I've never co-signed the argument that words cannot lead to things getting physical. I really think that like words can be so hurtful. Words can cross a line in such a big way that they can lead to somebody also crossing line in a different way. But I do think that words can push people past their limits. And, you know, I thought that with the Monique situation. And I think that here to a certain extent, Deborah is the worst, obviously. And that being said, you know, Candace was clearly calling her nasty names and she called her to help and all this stuff. And like when somebody is calling you those things, whether it's deserved or not, I mean, because Deborah did make very false claims about Chris, as we saw in the footage, like he was not flirting with her. He was not checking her out. She clearly was trying to like put herself into the realm of the show. She was trying to make herself relevant, all these things. I think that NECA was correct in saying that Deborah should have just like stayed away and been unbothered. And that is almost the best revenge sometimes. You know, if she was hearing Candace call her these names, like to be the bigger person is obviously the better move. But again, she was desperate for airtime, desperate to insert herself into the storylines of this show. And so I think Mia is also correct in saying that Deborah came into that finale party with an agenda. You know, the whole thing was just so ugly and not what the show is about. And I'm glad that it sounds like we won't be seeing Deborah on this show. I don't think we should have seen Deborah on this show this season either. But I really don't think that Ashley is to blame for like being responsible for this violent fight. Like that's not what happened here. And I'm very curious to see like if Kierna gets another chance of being on the show. Because obviously, as we know with some of the subsequent news that happened after the finale, like there's going to be a big shakeup on Potomac. Before I get to that point, though, you know, the last scene of the finale was them picking up cameras again following the news that Mia and Gordon had separated. And so we saw them in their apartment talking really openly and really kind of genuinely about their separation. And I found this scene to really be like the perfect example of truth telling and opening up that should happen if we're picking cameras back up. That's not what happened with Kyle on Beverly Hills when they picked cameras back up to show us her talking with Erica about the separation news. We saw a scene with Mauricio and the girls. It didn't feel like we were learning enough to like validate the decision to pick those cameras back up. But with Mia and Gordon, man, it felt worth it. Like they were very raw. They were very open. It really felt like we were almost watching a scene that we shouldn't be seeing. And not in a way that I think they shouldn't have picked the cameras back up, but in a way that feels like, okay, we're really getting an inside look into what's going on here. And I think that they both have points to be made. I think they're both sort of telling versions of their story of what happened, their points of view. And I think the truth is obviously somewhere in the middle of that. But I found it to be like a really great scene. And so kudos to them, honestly. Like kudos to Mia and Gordon for really bringing us in and really making that moment worth it. And then Mia was on Watch What Happens Live after the finale being even more open. Like, I really do think that Mia, and apparently on the reunion, we're going to get even more information about her and her boyfriend, Ink, about her and Gordon's separation. They're co-parenting very successfully now, apparently. So, which makes me happy. So, you know, I think that Mia, like, I think that in her first couple seasons, I don't know if we ever fully got like full authenticity or the full truth. And I think that's still kind of true, but I also think that this season, she really proved her worth. I think she proved that she can be a really great housewife. She was way more open this season. I just think that she's great, and I hope that she survives this sort of cast shakeup that's about to happen on Potomac, because she can be sort of like this next era of the show. I think, again, this season, she really proved herself, and it was kind of really fun to watch. Like, I think that she was a total bright spot for Potomac this season. The finale's on Sunday night, and then Monday morning, we kind of start the day with this news from Candace herself that she is leaving the show after 6 seasons. You know, all signs, I think, point to this genuinely being Candace's decision. Bravo has historically let women announce that they're leaving a show, even if it was out of their control, even if they were fired, even if they were put on pause, because it lets them exit gracefully. And I also think that it makes sure that there's not a lot of bad blood between the network and the women in case they want to bring them back in the future. And it sort of leaves that door cracked open. And I think that in this case, I think that Candace made this decision for herself. Whether that was to sort of get ahead of any potential casting decisions that would impact her, who knows? But I don't think that the network had really made that decision yet. And or that's sort of what I'm picking up. And, you know, I'm glad that she's making this decision that feels like the right decision, I think, for her and for the show. And I think that a little space from the show might do her well. It lets her focus on other endeavors like acting and her singing career. You know, when Brian Moylan was on the show a couple episodes ago, he said that the current sort of state of Candace on the show was reminding him of late stages of NeNe being on the show, when it felt like she was sort of checked out, like she wanted to move on to bigger and better things and potentially being above the show in some ways. And I agreed with that point. I see that with Candace. Maybe not necessarily being above the show, but it definitely feels like her eyes are elsewhere. Her heart is elsewhere. She wants to pursue the singing. She wants to pursue other endeavors. And like, more power to her. Go do that. Even like with Candy on Atlanta, it was sort of like she announces that she's leaving the show. Partially, I think, because like that pause for Atlanta has been like a little bit too long. But, you know, her heart was not in it this past season. I think when the women really want to be doing other things and it's impacting, you know, how checked in they are on the show, how much they're filming, how much they're showing up to group events, that's when I think that it's important for them to look inward and be like, okay, maybe it's not, maybe I can't be doing all of this at once. Maybe I do have to choose one or the other. And that feels like what's happening with Candace here. You know, so I do think it's the right decision for her. I hope we see her back in future years. But I also saw some people speculating on social media in the comments that they would not be surprised if something big happened in her personal life during her time away from the show. Whether that is trying for a baby, whether that is something in her relationship with Chris, I don't know if there's any validity to that, but I definitely saw some rumblings of that. You know, that's what happened with Kenya Moore. And we've seen it before where women take themselves out. I don't really know if I think that is what's happening here, but, you know, I guess some people wouldn't be surprised about that. And it's funny, last thing I'll say about that is I went to the Summer House Martha's Vineyard premiere party last Thursday, and Candace was there. So was Charisse. And I was part of sort of a group conversation with Candace, and you know, there was just no indication that this was going to happen. And so I think it's throwing everyone for a loop that she is officially out of Potomac. And it's hard to imagine at this point the show without her. But again, it feels correct if you really think about it. I'm curious what else happens to Potomac. I really do think this show needs a shakeup, and this is just sort of the start. It's the only official exit that we've gotten so far. But kind of right after that Candace news broke, from Candace and Bravo, Jasmine Brand reported that Robin Dixon will also be out of the show. Again, that has not been confirmed by the network or by Robin. And it feels a little early for that to be official, but this is one that I think needed to happen, I think for various reasons. One is that, you know, obviously it's no secret that at the end of season 7, Robin caught a lot of heat for talking about Juan's entanglement with that woman and buying her that hotel room. And she really told that story behind a paywall on her Patreon for Reasonably Shady, her podcast with Giselle. Obviously, we all know that story. And I think that whole situation gave her a huge opportunity coming into season 8 to kind of be the main character of the show. And, you know, all signs pointed to that potentially happening, but that's not really what ended up happening, is it? I mean, again, like, she had this storyline handed to her on a silver platter. We were all interested. We all wanted to hear more about what happened, what went down, what she really thinks happened. But the biggest issue, I think, for Robin this season was that Juan is so checked out of the show. He so clearly hates filming, hates opening up on camera, hates being sort of the villain or the person who has answering to do. So he really didn't want to play ball. They had a couple conversations, but nothing really that felt really authentic, nothing that felt really honest, nothing that felt extremely forthcoming. And that hurt her. And that, to me, was sort of the death knell for her on the show, at least for right now. And, you know, I think because of that, if they're not willing to sort of explore that huge story on camera for the sake of the show and for the sake of her future on the show, then there's not that much additional story for her to be telling right now on the show. There really isn't. Who knows if, again, time away from the cameras could impact their relationship, you know, for the better or for worse, if it could lead to other things for her that would make it worth for her to come back. But right now, I really do think that it's the right decision for Robin to not be on the show. I also think that it really opens up Giselle to get out of her comfort zone, to focus on other connections within this group, and to sort of force Giselle to think more on her toes. I think that Giselle is one of our best Real Housewives. She's amazing at her job, but I do think that she's also gotten comfortable on this show. And so without her right-hand woman, what does she do? You know, who does she lean on? Who does she gravitate towards? Does that make her more vulnerable to, you know, other women prying in her life? Like, I don't know. But, you know, I think Giselle is sort of one of the two supremes on the show, along with Karen. So I think it's very worth having Giselle still around on the show. But I think pulling Robin out of that equation is a really smart move. And so, again, that is not confirmed. That is heavily rumored. It's been reported, but it feels like it would be a correct decision. So I have no idea what the rest of what the rest of the shakeup might look like. I mean, I think it would be smart for them to open up at least like 2 to 3 spots on this show. Maybe we make somebody a friend of. There's a lot of potential here. I mean, DC is a city with, I'm sure, a lot of other great casting options. And it's Real Housewives of Potomac, but it's essentially Real Housewives of the DMV of DC, Maryland, and Virginia. So there's a lot of options out there. And, you know, Potomac has in its DNA such promise, such potential. It's delivered so many amazing moments over the years. So I think if they can get back to a place with a cast that gels well, that knows how to have fun together, that can make us laugh, then we'll be back on the right track. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's, again, sort of a prolonged pause, which seems to be kind of the case for a lot of our franchises right now. But, you know, we've seen it pay off for other franchises to wait a beat to jump back into filming and to find the right cast. And so I hope they do that with Potomac here. So the other thing that's being rumored right now and being reported right now is that Miami is taking a prolonged break, and they're also preparing for a big cast shakeup. This one to me is a big surprise. I guess the more that I think about it, the more that it might make sense, but I really have no idea what this could entail. I think Miami has had sort of a perfect 3-season run since it was brought back from the dead. It's been the same cast for 3 seasons, 9 women. They're all really delivering. It's really good balance. There's genuine connections there. It's sort of what, to me, Housewives is all about. That being said, once I saw this news and I've been thinking about it, it could make sense for them to make sure that it's not getting stale, to make sure that there is forward momentum. And I think if you left these 9 women all in a cast together, they would still find ways to deliver amazing seasons of Real Housewives, but it might not progress. And I can see why production could potentially be concerned about that. It doesn't get the best ratings. And I think part of that might be because of disinterest from the wider kind of Housewives viewership. I think that super fans of Housewives and people who really know that Miami is one of the best franchises and has been for the past 3 years. But there's clearly something that's not connecting. And I do think that the network has sort of toyed around with the time slot. And I think that there's a lot of fans who think that they haven't done the best job of promoting it and all these things. And that might be true. But again, now that I think about it, it's sort of like, okay, maybe it does make sense to shake it up and to make sure that we don't get stale here. You know, my gut would say that at least 1-2 OGs will be hitting the road. You know, I think Marisol is somebody whose story has been told. I think that people are getting a little bit fed up with her. I don't really know who else, though. And the other thing that I was thinking about is sort of like, you know, there were 3 seasons of this show before the reboot happened. And 5 of the women that are on this show right now were part of those seasons. And so, you know, I think I could see there being an argument to be made that, like, again, some of their stories have been told, or maybe they've kind of reached their sort of limit. I would be shocked if Alexia wasn't coming back. I mean, to me, she is so central to this show. I know she's divisive. I know that she can be really stubborn and all these things. But to me, she feels like she's part of the DNA of Real Housewives of Miami. Marisol, again, I think I could see her being the ones who is getting the axe. Larsa, to me, again, kind of feels essential to this show. Maybe that's being sort of naive, but like, she gets the show a lot of mainstream press. She brings like a name brand to the show, essentially, that's sort of beyond, it's recognizable beyond Housewives. And I think that there's a lot of value in that. We've seen that pay off on The New New York. We've seen that pay off on Beverly Hills. We've seen that pay off on Atlanta. So So I think there's genuine value in having somebody who is known beyond Housewives as a part of a cast. And Larsa definitely brings that the most. Lisa, I mean, I guess there could be an argument to be made to put her on pause, but I also think there's like so much story for her to tell. She's kind of a toss up for me, I guess. Like again, it's hard to imagine the show without her. Her storyline with about Lenny has been so essential to the show over the past couple seasons, but maybe they feel like she's kind of become a broken clock because she does talk about it a lot. And it's kind of in sort of legal purgatory. It seems like Lenny's never going to let this progress. And so maybe that's part of it. I don't know. Adriana, again, she feels essential. I think this you're sensing a running theme probably when I'm going through all these women, but like, fuck, it's hard to imagine. But Adriana, like, she's a friend of, yeah, but she, as we all know, she drives storyline, she drives drama, she pushes the envelope in a way that many of the full-time women don't do. And so like, do you have Miami without Adriana? Maybe she is picking the same fights over and over again. I don't know. I would hate to see her go. Dr. Nicole, I mean, one thought I had when thinking about this report is like, if you're thinking long-term for Real Housewives of Miami, if you think about the four newer women, Nicole, Gertie, Julia, and Kiki, who makes the most sense to sort of start shifting the show towards? To me, that's Nicole. She has this big, moneyed, rich, colorful life. We don't really know any of her other friends. So who knows if like, I don't know, like it would make sense to me if the show would maybe start to slowly shift in that direction. I don't think they should do that overnight, but like Nicole is a great housewife. She's a lot of legitimacy. She's down to play ball and that could be a direction for it. I mean, to me, she seems like she's challenging Alexia's crown for like the Cuban Barbie title, but that's sort of what it is. Gertie, I think it would be unfortunate that if she were to be let go sort of after a whole season that was about her breast cancer battle. I do think that Gertie sometimes can be doing a little too much at all times. And I think that Gertie, something that I'm surprised she hasn't learned to do more on the show is like to turn it down, to give us different levels of herself. She's kind of on 100 a lot of the time. And so I could see that being sort of like a notch against her. But again, she's really tight with Nicole. She has storyline going for her. But who knows? I mean, that's sort of my thought on Gertie. With Julia, she's another one who I could see, I guess, being let go. I think that I do like that she's brought this sort of like totally different energy to the show and not just to the franchise, but I think to like Housewives overall. Like Julia is one of the most like unique housewives and most un-housewife housewives that we have. But maybe her story's been told. Maybe the Martina Navratilova sort of calling card has sort of run its course. I don't know, but I could see that happening. And then to me, Kiki has like some of the best momentum out of all these, out of this cast. I mean, Kiki, as I've discussed on this podcast, Kiki really stepped it up this season. From the past three seasons, Kiki has had a bigger and bigger presence on the show. And I would love to see that continue. I would love to see her given the opportunity to step up even more, maybe be full time, maybe just show us more of her life. So I'd be really disappointed if Kiki didn't survive this shakeup. But yeah, those are my sort of, I guess, rambling thoughts about each of the castmates on Miami. I don't know what it's going to look like. I have not heard anything, but it scares me a little bit because Miami has been sort of like our baby for the past 3 years. And, you know, my hope is that the sort of shakeup, quote unquote, label is being a little dramatic and that we only have to say goodbye to like one to two, maybe three of these women. It's never bad to add fresh faces to the mix. So ultimately, I hope they know what they're doing. I hope they're making the best decision for the sake of the future of this show. But it's hard to envision Miami without these nine women. So TBD on that. Okay, so let's get into Buying Beverly Hills season two. Obviously, the biggest, you know, hook of this show's second season was the Kyle and Mauricio of it all. There was over a year between season one and season two. And while that felt weird at some points, I actually think that the timing of this show coming out was actually perfect. The trailer came out towards the end of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills this past season. It sort of promised to tell us more of the Kyle and Mauricio story. It's sort of piggybacking off of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills this past season in a really smart, really sort of welcome way, in a way that sort of makes it feel like, and I think I tweeted this, like it makes it feel like must-watch TV for Bravo fans. And like, even though ultimately a lot of those big moments that we saw on the show were clipped out on social, and you could probably piece together most of the new information that we got around Kyle Mauricio via those clips, I do think that watching the full season colors in more of the lines than just watching those clips does. Because there are sort of subtleties in the dynamics, there are subtleties in what they say to one another that I think tell us a good amount about sort of what's going down here. So as I said at the top of the show, I think my biggest takeaways are that like Housewives was Kyle's side of the story, and it also came from a slightly earlier point in the timeline, which I think is important to remember. The filming of these seasons did coincide, but ultimately Buying Beverly Hills ended later, which I think is sort of a check in the Mauricio column in terms of like him coming across better, it feeling like he's sharing more of the story. But yeah, so I think that benefits him because again, they're sort of more comfortable in talking about it. They've figured out more of it by the end of the filming happens. But yeah, it really feels like this season of Buying Beverly Hills was Mauricio's side of the story when it comes to his separation from Kyle. He was more open, I think, generally, for sure. But I also think that, you know, the narrative that Kyle didn't share anything is also false. I do think one of the big things that's missing from her side while watching this season of Buying Beverly Hills is the entire factor of her old friend's suicide, you know, which I personally think was a huge, huge, huge factor in all the changes that she made in her life and her lifestyle. And sort of, it was a huge aspect of her sort of just reevaluating her life and her marriage and all these things. You know, it prompted her to want different things and to expect different things from her marriage at a point where Mauricio couldn't really provide those things because, as we heard from her on Real Housewives, but also as we saw firsthand on Buying Beverly Hills, he's busy. He's more committed to his career than anything else. He doesn't want to slow down. He wants to continue to build this company. He wants to continue to have fun. And those two things are directly at odds with one another, you know, and we didn't hear once about that sort of aspect of the separation as it pertained to her friend's death. We didn't hear anything about that on the show. And I think that that is a huge missing piece. But, you know, I also think that she didn't necessarily get the kindest edit on this show. Like, there was a moment, they had this conversation in their kitchen about their really busy travel plans, about her going to Spain to film Housewives, about them never sort of having time, just them two together. And they're in their kitchen and you can kind of tell that she's like being dismissive of not being able to spend that time with him and sort of not knowing when they're going to be in the same place and prioritizing her own time with friends and traveling, all that. To me, like, there was a clear moment towards the end of that where she says like, whatever, or something like that. And it was very clearly like edited to be way more terse and sort of unsympathetic than I think that she probably was being. But, you know, this being his side, it's obviously going to be more sympathetic to him in general. So, you know, it's going to make him look like this hardworking family man who is sacrificing for his family, who's building this empire for them. And that's all true. And he's entitled to getting that treatment here. But it definitely feels very weighted towards him sort of being the sort of sacrifice from Kyle's sort of midlife crisis, I would say. So fast forward, you know, towards the end of the season, we get the episode where the people story comes out and the whole cast is shocked. They all, again, know Mauricio better than they know Kyle, but they all do know the couple pretty well and they're all stunned. And I think that Buying Beverly Hills benefited greatly from the fact that the entire family was together in Aspen right after the story broke. All four daughters, Kyle and Mauricio, were at their house. And also, by the way, Kyle said on Housewives that she has no idea who planted the story. We still don't know who it could be, who sort of leaked the fact that they were getting separated. But as Ben said on the show, people very rarely will publish something that big without either knowing for sure that it's true or without the direct sign-off from someone from that person's camp that confirms it. So like a lot of the time, the source will be somebody directly from X person's team or family or camp who has basically gotten sign-off to go public with the information. And obviously, this jumped the gun a bit on what their plans were, it seems. But like, it does make you think about sort of who this person was. I'm still wondering who this is. And could somebody from like Mauricio's team, somebody from the agency, somebody from his side, could they have planted it to sort of get the ball rolling faster on this separation or vice versa? And to me, that seems like the most likely story. But again, I just don't think that people would have gone forward with the story if they didn't know for sure that it was true. And it clearly was true, but like, did they really not know who planted it? I don't know. So anyway, to me, that conversation in Aspen at the Umansky family dinner was the most interesting part and most telling part of sort of what we learned about Kyle Mauricio via this show. So first of all, we get this shot of Kyle riding her bike up to the house with two massive Hermes bags sort of on each bike handle. It was just like iconic. I'll try to post it on Twitter or something. But that to me just like made me laugh sort of going into this more dramatic moment. Though we never found out what was in those bags, first of all. She was being very secretive about that. But anyway, right after that, they start to make dinner and they're sort of preparing to tell the girls and to have this big conversation about it. That scene just in the kitchen itself, like it showed a big difference in the approach that Mauricio and Kyle were having to this entire situation. So we see Mauricio joking around saying that he's glad that, you know, the claim is now that Kyle is having the affair instead of him. That tells me, first of all, that he probably really didn't think that anything was going on between Morgan and Kyle, by the way. Like if he was joking like it in the way that he was, I don't think that he thought there was any truth to that sort of claim of the whole situation, unless he was trying to get her to like confess in that moment. But I don't think he was. I think he genuinely doesn't believe that, at least at that point, that there was anything going on between them. But then again, on the flip side, we see Kyle taking it very seriously, talking sort of about the comments she had seen on social media and like in articles and things, sort of expressing disappointment about, you know, the fact that they were breaking up after 27 years. And people were being like sort of blaming her for it. And she was being way more emotional about the whole situation, which makes sense because we know that she's a very emotional person. And I think one of my takeaways from this whole season of buying Beverly Hills is that Mauricio doesn't seem super in touch with his own emotions. He seems to almost tear up during one confessional at the very end of the show. But other than that, he's like very sort of straightforward and sort of almost monotone in the way that he delivers information. And that's obviously a huge difference between them. Then we see them telling the girls about it, and they're all sort of talking very openly about the fact that their family always sweeps things under the rug, never talks about big topics. I think we've seen that with Kyle and her sisters a lot of the time, so that's not a surprise to hear that. But I like that the girls held their parents' feet to the fire a little bit in this moment and like forced them to talk about things to hopefully change that as part of their family, because I think that's very important. And you know, Kyle obviously like does the apologizing for the article coming out before she could tell them about it. And I think Kyle apologizing for that and genuinely feeling bad about that, to me, tells me that they were not expecting the People story to come out, which complicates sort of my speculation about who could have like signed off on that being leaked. And that's also sort of why I believe her version of events as it pertains to Morgan and her relationship with her, because, you know, she just commented on this post that Morgan posted. She was like, save a horse, ride a cowgirl. So that to me is like one of the most overt sort of moments of her maybe confirming that something is going on between them. But that comment came out several days after season 2 of Buying Beverly Hills came out. She commented it after the season of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, you know, ended. And so like maybe she feels more freedom to explore that connection now that there aren't cameras in her face and now that those things have aired and we've seen those conversations from last year. Who knows? And I don't really like to speculate that much about sort of like the sexuality aspect of this and their relationship, the nature of their relationship. But I do think that the press and the shows and sort of being officially separated before getting physical was something that is really important and sacred to Kyle. Like she really believes in marriage and she really believes in sort of like that fidelity. And that's why I think that she would never have crossed the line with Morgan before her separation from Mauricio was officially sort of given the green light and sort of officially happening. And I think all signs point to the fact that is going to happen. They probably will get divorced. Something in me just feels like she wouldn't get physical with somebody until that was happening. Maybe there was a sort of an emotional thing that there clearly was an emotional thing that was happening between them. But I kind of am in line with Kyle and Mauricio sort of in their presentation of the fact that nothing happened between Kyle and Morgan until perhaps now. Who knows? But during that conversation with the girls, there's this very meta moment where Farrah asks Kyle about them picking the cameras back up again for Housewives to talk about it. She says she's going to film without Mauricio because Mauricio's going to be in Aspen, and that's because he's filming for his show. So it's this weird sort of like thing that makes you think about like, okay, what did they agree to show on either show? And what was sort of like there had to have been an agreement of some sort, whether that was in their contracts or just like between family members of like, okay, are we going to talk more about it on Buying Beverly Hills because there are 4 family members who are cast members on this show? Or like, it's very interesting to me. Later on, you know, they all sit down 3 months later And Mauricio says he's going to have this conversation with Kyle after his sit down with his daughters. They're going to talk about everything, but we don't get to see that conversation or even hear about it, which again, like, if there was this agreement to say more of the stuff on buying Beverly Hills, why did we not see that conversation between Kyle and Mauricio? Is that because of some stipulation with Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? I don't know. It's kind of all a mind fuck, but I really think that that is sort of playing into why we're seeing certain things on Housewives, why we're seeing certain things on buying Beverly Hills. So speaking of, we pick the cameras back up 3 months later. We get that sit down with Mauricio and the daughters. And again, I like that they are pushing Mauricio and holding his feet to the fire and fighting for them to fight more for this marriage, because from the daughter's perspective, it feels like Mauricio and Kyle are just sort of like resigned to the fact that it's not going to work out between them. So I'm glad they're sort of pushing him on that. And Mauricio, I think this is the first time that he says that he wants to be separated from Kyle now. He says, I'm where your mom was 6 weeks ago. He says that Kyle has sort of taken over most of the second floor of their home. And again, I really wish that we had seen that conversation between him and Kyle, but who knows why we didn't. They also grill Mauricio about him telling TMZ that him and Kyle are officially separated before he told his daughters that. Again, it's this weird mindfuck of like, the press is this other factor, another sort of person in the family and in the relationship, and it impacts sort of how they all process this stuff. So he talks to TMZ, and that TMZ on the street interview was in reaction to him being spotted holding hands with his Dancing with the Stars partner, which again, that was initially part of that story. And just a gentle reminder that he did not have to talk about that on this season of Buying Beverly Hills. He was not asked about it. He didn't address it. I mean, he does say that they sort of have both given each other clearance to start dating other people. But again, this is his side of the story and there's sort of a safety in that. This is his turf. He did not have to talk about that heart, that sort of more difficult factor of like it being a bad look that he's also sort of stepping out. And I don't know. I think that's very telling. There was also a TMZ article like last week about how sources close to them are saying that the separation is for good. There's no turning back now. And it also says that they are potentially stringing this along for their respective shows, which I think is fairly obvious. And I don't know. I don't necessarily blame them because I do like finding out about things on these shows and finding out about sort of the behind the scenes, what we don't know, and sort of waiting to hear some of that. I think that sort of is part of the appeal of these shows. But I wonder, again, if there was sort of some sort of agreement about the rollout of subsequent updates to sort of help promote the shows or make sure that certain reveals or conversations weren't spoiled by things happening in the news before these shows aired. It almost feels like there was sort of a sequence of events that had to happen. So like, you know, Kyle sort of acknowledged on the Beverly Hills reunion that, you know, she's unsure about how her feelings about Morgan. Nothing's happened physically between them, but she might potentially have feelings about her, but she doesn't really cross that line to admitting anything else. Maybe because Buying Beverly Hills hadn't aired yet. And now that Buying Beverly Hills has aired, she comments that thing on Morgan's video, Save a Horse, Ride a Cowgirl. Will we see her be a little bit more open about hinting at an actual relationship with Morgan? I don't know. But to me, there feels like certain lines that couldn't have been crossed until now. Now they're officially separated. It's again, no turning back. So now it's sort of, there's no element of like timelines crossing over or cheating accusations or not having clearance to date other people. Like now they are both fully in the clear to do that. That feels like it's playing into sort of what we're learning and when. So that's sort of my thoughts on Kyle and Mauricio as it pertains to what we learned in the second season of Buying Beverly Hills. Again, I think we found a lot of telling things. I think it tells us a lot about their differing sides of the stories, where things overlap and where things differ. Again, I'm really curious to see in these coming months if the sort of floodgates will open on it. Like, I don't know, especially from Kyle's side. I think she had to hold back on Beverly Hills. And I think part of that was sort of to protect her family and to protect the timeline that her and Mauricio were working towards agreeing upon. And I think some of the criticism is definitely earned in terms of her not being fully open. Like I think on the reunion when she said, you know, there were certain things that happened in her marriage. We never heard about what those things were, but maybe those things are things they talked about on Buying Beverly Hills. I don't know. And I didn't like how on the reunion she said that like it's none of our fucking business. I actually think it is, because we have been watching their marriage on TV for almost 15 years. I think that we are entitled to information about this, especially because they are reality shows. Her own daughter, Alexia, said like in a tearful confessional, she was like, listen, our family has grown up on TV in the public eye, and it's brought so many blessings, so many opportunities, so much wealth. And these hard moments are obviously difficult, but they come with the territory. She basically said that. And I think that maybe her mom, Kyle, should hear that, you know, and be reminded of that. But again, I'm curious what these next couple months look like. I'm guessing that Beverly Hills will pick up filming sometime soon. So who knows? Maybe the reveal's happening in the next season of Beverly Hills. We'll see. But I had some other thoughts on buying Beverly Hills before I sign off for the day. I love Kyle and Mauricio's daughters. Like, obviously, we've known them over the years, but it's been really fun, I think, to get to know them better through this show. The first season was a little bit more stilted and like I wasn't sure what to think about Alexia necessarily, but Farrah in particular to me is like such a vibe. I love her. I've met her a couple times and she really just like impresses me. Alexia to me reminds me the most of Kyle. She's emotional and fun loving and clearly like a people person and a go-getter. And I really kind of grew to love her this season even more. I still don't totally understand Sophia, I will say, but I also think that adding her to the equation this season helped give the sister dynamic a little bit more breathing room. It added some complexity to it. And I think that was important. I think it actually made them all like almost more likable in a way. And I also like, even though I don't totally understand her, I like that Sophia is not afraid to call things out. That being said, some of the earlier scenes this season, like focused on her learning the ropes of real estate, were a little painful, I have to say. About Farrah's split from her fiance, Alex. So I remember a few months after season one aired, which is when we saw her get proposed to, she got engaged on the first season. I was in LA and I was at a restaurant and she was actually at the table next to me with a bunch of guys. I didn't see her fiance with her. And then I went to her Instagram and she hadn't posted her fiance in quite some time. And that I definitely remember, I remember texting people and being like, wait, have we heard that like Farrah and her fiance have split? Like, I don't know. So I was on watch. And then last August, around the time that this show filmed, she was spotted without her ring. That's where the public speculation began about her breakup. And again, I do kind of wish that we had heard more about the breakup on this season. But she's also clearly kind of a private person, which again, like it's kind of an oxymoron if you're on a reality show. But ultimately, I think we did learn enough about it. Also, I have to say, kind of obsessed with Melissa, Farrah's friend. Like, even though she definitely got caught in the crossfire a little bit, I do think that that was mostly like a misunderstanding and miscommunication. And I think that she's ultimately like a really loyal, good friend who can keep up with them, which can be rare, I think, when you sort of are in such rarefied air, like when you have so much money and you're sort of living these lifestyles, a lot of people like that need friends who can keep up with that. And Melissa seems to be one of those people. She seems like a good friend. She makes me laugh. I do think that the whole thing with her and Sophia and like that robotic guy they work with was so odd when they were in Miami. He feels almost like an AI reality star. Like if you pay attention to how he like would ask questions during group scenes or like, he just like, there was something about him that to me was like so robotic and so off. I don't even remember his name, but he was hot, I guess. And then there's Michelle. Woof. So Michelle, a woman who we did not see on season one from what I remember, there's a scene where like she goes directly to Ben and Joey in their office and they are both very much in Mauricio's pocket. That's very clear to me. They're both close with the Umansky girls and she complains about like nepotism and what the succession plan at the agency might look like, that Farrah and Alexia would flop in a room full of men in suits, that they would not know how to run the company. She says that it would be business suicide if Mauricio hands the company over to one of them. And it's like, okay, one, Mauricio, as he said, is showing no signs of slowing down or giving up his company. He's clearly like obsessed with it. That is the other woman, honestly, in his relationship. And two, like there are cameras in her face. If she's so career oriented, if she's so like, you know, hopeful about potentially like becoming CEO one day, why is she saying all this on camera? And three, like they're clearly going to repeat what she said. Again, they are in his pocket. They're loyalists to Mauricio. What does she think? And to me, that whole situation was giving, she wanted to be on the show. She was sort of like a founding employee of this company. She saw all these people sort of like getting all these Instagram followers and fame via this Netflix reality show. And I think that she wanted in. And I think that she kind of got caught up in a producer-encouraged storyline where she starts to question the sort of capabilities of the girls and what's going to happen once Mauricio's out of the picture. And I think that she got ahead of herself. And I think that she got in over her head as it came to the reality TV of it all. You know, I believe that she's probably really good at selling houses. She's probably a fairly good businesswoman, but girl, she kind of reminds me of Nicole from Selling Sunset, who joined like a season or two ago, because they had both been at these companies for a very long time. They both had genuinely sold a lot of houses. That's kind of unlike what we see on these shows. We barely see very many sales. And she wanted, again, she wanted in on the cut of the reality show. She wanted in on a piece of that pie. But sometimes very good employees of these companies don't make for good reality stars. And I think that they are both evidence of that. You know, when we see that sit down with her and Mauricio, and he doesn't even greet her, but he closes the door first. And she's like, oh, it's going to be one of those conversations. It's like, girl, what did you expect? You're literally shit talking his daughters. And he found out about it. Like, girl. And then in the last episode, she goes up to Farah and Alexia and she apologizes to them. And they forgive her very quickly. Again, that is giving like conflict resolution for the sake of a season finale. But then she goes and insults Alexia again. Michelle is beyond, and I need more of her. She's a great foil for these girls, I will say. And I'm also kind of obsessed with Ben. Like, I don't know. There's something about him that I find like so funny. And his dynamic with the girls is like really hilarious to me. And he shows up in the craziest outfits. In one of the last episodes, he shows up with like basketball shoes on and like cargo pants rolled up to his knees. I'm like, I don't even know. And he always has that Hermes belt on, which like I need him to throw away. But like, there's something about Ben that I actually find really watchable and really entertaining. Sonica, on the other hand, oh my God. She's always like showing up straight off the plane from Boston with her sunglasses on, struts through the office, hasn't sold a house in like 2 years. And then she like throws a fit when she's like kicked off the team or her bona fides are questioned. It's like, ma'am, go try out for American Idol again. Like, this just does not seem like the business for you, but clearly she wants to be on the reality show. And so that's why she's showing up and trying to get a storyline. In the last episode, when she asked Brandon for his cut of the sales on the house that her ex is trying to sell because she helped design the house. And he was like, was she on an HGTV show? Is she in construction? I was crying. Like, that was her best moment of the season. And she looked like a fool. So I don't know. But like, that girl, I don't understand her. Tyler, to me, a great vibe, genuinely good at her job. She feels like she could be like a redeeming cast member on like Selling the OC or Selling Sunset. Honestly, like, I really like her energy. She's not like the most, like, she's not the biggest personality in the room, but I like her presence on the show. And I'm glad this season had less of Joey. Like, he is clearly in love with Lexia. He thinks that they're like destined to be together, but I think he needs to read the writing on the wall. Like, it ain't gonna happen. Miss Thing is out here trying on engagement rings at David Yurman. Like, the jig is up. It's over. Move on. And he needs to stop saying that he's like giving her listings because he like thinks that like there might be a chance they can get back together. Like, he misplayed this whole season. I'm glad that his airtime was cut down. All in all, I enjoyed this second season of Buying Beverly Hills. Like, to me, it gave what it needed to give. Unlike Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, we got a lot more about Kyle and Mauricio. I liked getting to know the daughters a lot better, and I just found it pretty entertaining. I don't think the episodes all need to be an hour long, but, you know, it's a solid Netflix reality show. It feels more substantial than Selling Sunset does. It feels more substantial than Selling in the OC does. And for that, you know, kudos. Anyway, that is it for today's episode of Gabbing with Gib. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this right now. Tell your friends about it. Follow us on Instagram at Gabbing with Gib, on TikTok at Gabbing with Gib, youtube.com/@Gabbing with Gib to watch full interviews and episodes with guests. And I'll be back on Friday with a guest to talk about Vanderpump Rules, The Valley, and more all things Bravo. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.